This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Good morning, DCR.
Got the number one pick and a Super Bowl champ with the man they can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's Lawrence Taylor!
I don't marry trash, CMT for short. Wonder if we best, won't you peep the score? Sports Center E, gonna be top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise and shine with 98.7. This is Drive Time. We provide highlights from your favorite teams. Dave, Chris, and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
The only guy brave enough from this show to hang out with me is Chris Canty. I knew there was at least one gentleman on this show. It's Bob Wischusen. And for, I guess, Dave Rothenberg and Rick DiPietro, one-third, the gentlemanly part of DCR, decided to come back for vacation to hang out with me. And that's Chris Canty. We welcome you to what will be a jam-packed morning here on 98.7 ESPN. A little past 5 a.m., Bob Wischusen and Chris Canty, DCR. Plenty of baseball to talk about. Obviously, the Yankees are a huge topic as they open up a series with the Tampa Bay Rays. We got the Mets splitting a doubleheader last night with the Atlanta Braves. Football is back. Chris Canty is back. Good morning, big fella.
Good morning, B.O.B. I'm doing well. I'm fresh off the bird from Vegas. Got in last night around 11 p.m.
Oh.
So I'm operating on about 3 hours of sleep. But I'm excited to get up with you, and I'm excited to talk about some football, man. Jets and Giants reporting to training camp. I'm loving it, especially the fact that I don't have to put on pads and cleats and go out there and practice.
Do you get, like, twitchy at this time? I was talking to Willie Colon about this yesterday. He got, like, he said usually about sometime like mid-June, late June, early July, he get like that pit in his stomach and get twitchy and feel like, for some reason, I just got to go work out because that's what I've done my whole life. What about you?
Well, I'll tell you this, B.O.B. I might get twitchy, but I think my twitchy is a little bit different from Willie Colon's. When I'm talking about getting twitchy this time of year, that means going to the refrigerator, grabbing a Corona, and sitting back and putting my feet up, being glad that I don't have to go out there and have two-a-days. That's my idea of getting twitchy this time of year. Like, me and my boys, we always celebrate now that we're on the other side of this thing, because no matter what player you talk to, nobody, B.O.B., likes training camp.
Yeah.
Nobody likes training camp.
In my life, they just don't.
If a veteran player tells you they like training camp, they're lying to you.
Right. In my life, I call that Wednesday. Like, getting twitchy for a Corona and wanting to go to the fridge and, like, grab food.
Oh, you sound like my kind of guy.
Yeah.
We got to hang out more, B.O.B.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have a lot in common. Absolutely.
There you go.
All right, we're going to get to not only the locals, and we definitely want to talk about the Jets and Giants, but I want to get your take on the two biggest stories in the NFL, and that's the two quarterback stories that came out yesterday. What was your take on what you heard about Aaron Rodgers?
I thought it was interesting that they decided that they were going to avoid the last year of the deal, which I believe is 2023. To me, I mean, I think that that's one of those things where it gives Aaron Rodgers some flexibility, some control over what happens after the 2021 season. Because let's face it, like, the Green Bay Packers, their most prized asset is Aaron Rodgers. And if he decides that he didn't like what happened in terms of them drafting Jordan Love to be a successor without having any input, he doesn't like how they shaped the roster, he doesn't like the outcome of what was going to happen in 2021, then they're almost in a position where they have to trade him. Like, not that they would want to trade him, but they would have to trade him, even if Jordan Love is not ready, just because you can't afford to let him walk out of the door after the 2022 season and only have a compensatory draft pick to show for it. There's no chance that they could let that happen. If you're Brian Gutekunst, that would be franchise malpractice.
And so, I was talking to Bart Scott about this a couple weeks ago. You're not trading him now because what are you getting for him? I mean, most of what you're going to get for him is draft choices. When's the draft? Draft's in April. So don't you think this was the logical result of the behind-the-scenes conversation where they said to Aaron Rodgers, look, man, you're going to sit all year. You're going to miss a year of accrued service time towards free agency. You're going to get fined.
Oh, he doesn't care about
that,
though.
$1 billion.
He doesn't care about the free agency thing.
You know, and maybe he doesn't.
He doesn't care about that.
But you're going to sit all year. Like, we're not trading you until next year. So, because it doesn't do us any good. All we're doing is giving into your demands and giving you what you want if we trade you now, because what we're going to get back for you, we can't use until next April anyway. So to me, I think this was kind of a logical landing point of eventually we are going to give you what you want. But at the same time, it's not going to be now. We might as well come to an agreement on you sticking around and playing for another year. And then eventually we should be able to arrive at what would be a much more amicable solution. We're trading him after they get another year out of him at the time they were going to trade him anyway.
No, you're right about that. I mean, I said all along that I felt like Aaron Rodgers was going to play again for the Green Bay Packers just because he didn't have any leverage. I mean, what's his recourse if they decide they're not going to trade him? He's going to sit out? There's no chance that he was going to sit out. You're going to burn your what I think is his age 38 season? I mean, we don't know how many years Aaron Rodgers has left at playing at a high level, playing at an MVP level. He doesn't know that. So, I mean, there's no way that he would be willing to give that up. Like, to me, this was going to be the only conclusion if we were indeed going to see Aaron Rodgers on a football field this year. It was going to be in a Green Bay Packers helmet. So I expected this. This is not a surprise to me. I didn't know whether or not he would report to training camp on time, and it sounds like that's exactly what's going to happen. But, I mean, I expected him to show up at some point before the start of the regular season. And so I know there's got to be a sigh of relief if you're head coach Matt LaFleur, if you're a player in that Packers locker room, knowing that you're going to have your MVP quarterback back this year. You don't have to worry about whether or not Jordan Love is ready to go.
Do we want to hear from – are you interested in hearing a little bit from Adam Schefter on, like, how this whole thing came together? Because he was on NFL Live. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Who wouldn't want to hear from Schefty, man?
Yeah.
Friend of the show, too? Yeah, we got to hear from Schefty.
All right, so Schefter yesterday, NFL Live. Might as well play cut number one, just how things changed between Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay. Let's hear what he has to say.
Aaron Rodgers' plan was not to show up to training camp and to not play this season. And the talks intensified over the weekend – to the point where they offered, the Packers did, enough in the way of concessions to get Aaron Rodgers to change his stance. The stance was no go. That was the plan. And the plan changed, as it sometimes can, when training camp approaches. And now they are trying to finalize this agreement that will give Aaron Rodgers more control over his future, that will allow him some say there, that will allow him to come back to Green Bay, which is what the Packers wanted, which I think deep down inside is what Aaron Rodgers was comfortable with, but not under the existing terms.
And Adam Schefter went on to say, and Chris, I think this backs up exactly what you're talking about. Here's Schefty on how this is actually paving a way for him to eventually leave Green Bay.
This is about the way things are run. This is about structure. This is about creating a path for Aaron Rodgers to leave Green Bay potentially after this season. The Packers have voided the 2023 season on Aaron Rodgers' deal, which was the last year in his contract. And they've also agreed to promise to review his situation after this year. So if Aaron Rodgers still wants a trade after this year, he can get it.
How would you feel being his teammate? How would you feel about a guy that right now knows going into this season, all right, yeah, I'm going to play with you guys. Are you really all in? Are you really the Aaron Rodgers from a dedication standpoint you've always been? Or is this just a year of you treading water until you can get the heck out of here?
Yeah, I think his teammates probably feel excited, ecstatic about having Aaron back this year. Like, they're not thinking about what happens beyond 2021 because, let's face it, most guys in the NFL, you're year to year anyway. Now, it's rare to see a quarterback lumped into that same boat. I've always said that quarterbacks are a lot closer to the ownership in the front office than they are the other 52 guys on an NFL roster. But to see how the Packers have handled Aaron the last couple of years, albeit not a surprise, it's one of those things where it's like, man, it's unbelievable that you could actually have an organization treat an MVP quarterback this way. But that's what the Packers do. I mean, you look at it, and when you start talking about the succession plan, like this is what they do. I mean, once upon a time, they drafted Aaron Rodgers to be the successor for Brett Favre when everybody felt like Favre still had a lot of tread on the tires. This is how the Packers organization does business. It's interesting to see how Aaron's reacting to the realization that you're not different, even though you've played at a higher level.
Right. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. Bob Wischusen in for at least two-thirds of DCR, but the class of DCR is showing up this morning, and that's Chris.
There you go.
That's right. Mike Tannenbaum is going to join us coming up a little bit later on. We're exactly not sure of the time. As soon as the GM nails down a time, we will let you know. We're going to talk to him about everything going on in the NFL. And real quick before we get to the locals, what was your reaction with, and maybe predictably, Deshaun Watson shows up at Houston Texans camp, but now the Texans are basically putting it out there that, yes, he is on the trading block and we are willing to move him. But under what scenario? Like, with all of the off-the-field stuff, with all of the sexual assault allegations still hovering over Deshaun Watson, not being solved yet, how does the, like, what's the end game here? You really think there's a team out there that would give up a significant compensation package for Deshaun Watson not being 100% sure how this is all going to play out this year, what suspension might eventually, you know, hit them at some point? I mean, who knows? He could be suspended for the whole year. We don't know.
No, we don't know what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson. There's still a huge question mark there, and I think that's going to affect the compensation going back to the Texans if, in fact, there's another team out there that's willing to consummate a deal at this moment in time. But the one thing that I will say about him reporting is I'm not surprised.
Right.
I mean, the NFL allows teams to fine you up to $50,000 a day for the missed time during training camp. So, I mean, Deshaun Watson is not in a hurry to do the Texans or the NFL any favors by staying away. Like, he's going to keep as much money in his pocketbook as he possibly can, and he's going to force the Texans or force Roger Goodell into an uncomfortable spot where they got to take him away from what's going on right now league-wide. Like, this is one of those things that casts a cloud on the entire NFL where all the fan bases are excited about their teams getting back to training camp. You got to talk about Deshaun Watson and the 22 civil complaints, not to mention now you have double-digit criminal complaints around the quarterback. So this is not the news that the league office wants when they're getting ready to gear up for training camps.
And just for any player, those fines are now real, right? Like, we've heard our whole lives that, you know, players get fined for not showing up to training camp, but those fines sometimes were just funny money, right? Like, they would, okay, you're in camp, we're going to waive the fines, we're going to give them money. Now, you can't waive the fines. The $50,000 that you lose every day when you don't show up cannot be given back. I'm not sure how much you think that's influencing some of these guys coming back, but I would think it probably has a big influence.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, money is money, B.O.B. I mean, $50,000 is a lot of money. So, yeah, guys are going to show up on time. They're not going to use that trade-out vehicle in order to get to where they want to go. So I just feel like, I mean, the holdout vehicle, excuse me. So that's just not what's happening now. That's not how business is going to be done in the NFL moving forward. But with Deshaun Watson, it's going to be really interesting. Like, I'm hearing people all over the place talk about there's no way a general manager can trade for Deshaun Watson. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, these folks have got to be out of their minds. They've got to be out of their minds. While what he's dealing with is uncomfortable and there's still a lot of unknowns out there in terms of when he will be back on the field, fact of the matter is Deshaun Watson will play in the NFL again. Like, that is going to happen again. Like, we've had guys do really bad things. I mean, we've had guys kill people and come back and play in the NFL. But when you're talented, teams will make exceptions. Although owners might not like it, fan bases might not like it, they will grit their teeth, they will bear it, because a guy can help their team win. And that's exactly the situation around Deshaun Watson. You're talking about somebody 25, 26 years old that's top five at the quarterback position. So stop yourself when you're saying, oh, there's no way a general manager can trade for Deshaun Watson right now. Because if the price is right, there would be a GM out there that's willing to make that deal.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we talked about the two big national NFL stories. The local NFL stories, just as big as far as we're concerned, but I don't know, I got it, like, what does Chris Canty do with his last few hours in Las Vegas before he knows he's got to come back and work talk shows with me? Right? Like, to me, there's got to be a send-off somehow before you come back and put yourself through 3 days of doing this with me.
No grand send-off, B.O.B. Just spending time at the pool at the Cosmopolitan, catching some sun with my lady and one of my good friends from college who was celebrating his 40th birthday That was the whole reason why I decided to make the trip out to the desert, B.O.B., over the weekend, nice. Because we were all getting together to celebrate my guy Ray Mann's 40th birthday. Hadn't seen him in a while, so it was a good chance for us to catch up and to celebrate him. It was a good time. It was a good time. But, I mean, I will say this. Vegas is probably one of the most interesting places in the entire world, especially if you don't gamble, because your people watch. And just some of the debauchery that you see people getting into over the weekend, really, really interesting, B.O.B. Really, really interesting. So I'll give you one story. So when
I want to hear.
When I'm checking in to the hotel on Friday morning, because I got in at around 1 o'clock on Friday morning, I'm in the lobby with my lady, and it's like a line out the door to check in at this particular time. I'm like, oh, great. All right, it's not going to be another hour before I get up to my hotel room. But I'm looking around, and there is a toddler, couldn't have been any more than 3 years old, crying uncontrollably in the lobby.
This and is 1 o'clock in the morning?
1 o'clock in the morning.
A.M.
1 o'clock in the morning, A.M.
Only in Vegas would somebody have a toddler in line to check into a hotel at 1 o'clock in the morning. But go ahead.
Exactly. So that's my whole point. So a toddler crying uncontrollably, and the mom is looking at the child and is getting so frustrated, so upset. And I'm thinking to myself, in her mind, she thinks there's something wrong with the kid, but there's nothing wrong with the kid. The kid is absolutely right. The kid ain't got no damn business being in the lobby of the Cosmopolitan at 1 o'clock on Friday morning.
Right.
That's the mama's fault. B.O.B., usually I'm a judge-free zone when it comes to lifestyle and what you want to do, your vices, how you want to live, whatever. But having the babies out in the hotel like the Cosmopolitan at 1 o'clock in the morning, come on, man. Come on, America. We got to do a little bit better.
Yeah, like the kid, if the kid could speak, what the kid's crying is actually could be translated into adult talk is, Mom, the hell you got me in the line at the Cosmopolitan at 1 o'clock in the morning for? Right?
Oh, like that, man. It's unbelievable, man. Like, it's just unbelievable some of the stuff that you will see in Las Vegas, Nevada.
I have 5 kids. My wife is, like, at least in my ear, she is a, like, super judgmental mom when it comes to that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think anything makes my wife angrier than when she sees a crying baby past dark. I don't know what it is, but that baby should be in bed. What is that baby doing up? If she saw a crying baby at 1 o'clock in the morning checking into a hotel in Las Vegas, she would have lost her mind.
She would have lost it?
Lost it.
She's not wrong. Like, it's just one of those things, man, that triggers you. It's like, come on, people, we got to do better. Like,
that's exactly right. That's a good word for it.
What part of the parenting playbook is that? Like, I'm going to sneak off to Vegas this weekend. I'm going to take the baby with me, and we're going to check in at 1 o'clock in the morning at the Cosmo. Because that's the way to go.
You must have at least one good Vegas story that might get both of us fired if you told it, though, right? Because your weekend in Vegas, like, there's got to be at least something. Because, again, you're Chris Canty. I mean, look, I'm like the schlunker at the pool with the farmer tan and the man boobs. And, like, you know, but you're like a former pro athlete with the mirrored sunglasses on. Like, I'm sure in a cabana of some sort, right? Like, you're on a chaise lounge with, you know, like the, you know, table service, like bottle service, that type of thing. That's the life. That's the life you live. I can tell.
Oh, absolutely. That's definitely my game plan, Bill. But the stories that I could tell, I'm not worried about us being fired. What I am worried about is my fiance getting upset, because that could be a problem.
Got it.
But yeah, we don't have those kind of stories in your late 30s in Vegas, not when you're out there with your fiance.
Yeah.
And you want to have a good marriage. You're not going to have those types of stories. Now, 10 years ago, that version of Chris Canty, especially at the pool party at the Hard Rock, I think they called it Rehab back in the day. Yeah, we got plenty of those types of Vegas stories. But
can I experiment a little bit?
Yeah, we did a lot of experimenting at that time. But not anything this trip. Not anything on my side.
That's
on this
shame.
Trip.
I mean, because I got to tell you, as like the balding, chubby 50-year-old guy that really doesn't blend well at the Hard Rock party, I was hoping to kind of live vicariously through Chris Canty. Thought you might be able to, you know,
I would love to share some of those stories with you, B.O.B., and maybe off air I can. But if we were to do it on air, I would need like affidavits. I would need like permission from guys that I was with. Like, there was a lot of sketchy stuff going on back in the day. I'm just saying.
Pulls everybody in the building.
Yeah. And there's still sketchy stuff going out there in Vegas. It's just that we're not participating in that kind of stuff anymore.
If you say so. All right. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ES. ESPN. Again, DCR here on ESPN. Bob Wischusen in for DiPietro. Rothenberg, they have the day off. Chris Canty, kind enough to take the Learjet back from Vegas to hang out with me. All right, look, as we said, you get a little twitchy this time of year, but for a Corona and some snacks, I call that Wednesday, but it is football time. And Jets and Giants back on the field this week. What do you think the biggest couple of storylines as we open camp for the New York locals are? Is it all about the quarterbacks? You know, Jets starting over again with a franchise quarterback, hopefully. Is this the prove-it-or-lose-it year for Daniel Jones? You know, new coaching staff with the Jets, pressure on the GMs to make, you know, all of the money that they've spent, the decisions that they've made stand up. What are you most fascinated by with our teams as we get set to kick off football season?
Well, the quarterbacks are always going to be front and center, B.O.B., because it's a quarterback-driven league. And in this time, we got two really young quarterbacks that have a lot of promise, that have a lot of physical tools. It's just a matter of whether or not we're going to be able to see those guys put it all together on the field this year. But when you take it beyond those guys, I think for the Jets, the biggest thing is seeing the young guys be contributors to this team. Like the guys that are rookies, the guys that are in their second years, are they going to be able to step up and become, you know, mainstays for this Jets team? That's what we're going to be looking for. I mean, Zach Wilson, Elijah Vera Tucker, Elijah Moore, who everybody is raving about. I mean, everybody's talking about Michael Carter, the running back that the Jets took in the middle rounds, and him being the lead back for this team coming into training camp. So, I mean, I think those are the things that you'd want to look at with Gangrene. And with the Giants, it's the new faces that you have. I mean, all the weapons that you went out and you got for Daniel Jones, Kenny Golladay, Kadarius Toney, Kyle Rudolph. And then you look at the defensive side of the ball. They went out and spent big money on Adoree Jackson. So, I mean, I think those are the things that you would want to look at and see how those pieces get integrated into this team. And then the overall formation of the identities for both respective squads, because I think that's the biggest thing that both of these teams have to take out of training camp. What team do we have to be? Who do we have to turn into in order to give ourselves the best chance to be successful? Those are the things that I think all the fans should be watching for the New York football teams.
Yeah, I've got a take on what I think both teams have done well, but I'm going to frame it in a question to you. And look, you're a defensive player, so I'll be interested to get your take in today's NFL. If you had to, just generally, philosophically as a general manager, spend money, free agent capital, draft capital, whatever, on which side of the ball, in today's NFL do you think is more important to spend resources on?
Well, I mean, I think that there's so many opportunities to score points based on how the rules are in today's NFL, right? It's really hard to play defense. Like, I mean, you have the quarterback protections. I mean, you can't touch the receivers once they get beyond 5 yards. Like,
right.
It's just you can't enforce the middle of the field defensively by being able to knock out receivers that aren't looking for defenders. So it's really hard to play defense. You can't lead with the crown of your helmet when you're making a tackle outside of the tackle box. Like, there's a lot that's working against the defensive side of the ball. So the obvious answer would be, okay, focus on the offense, try to score as many points as you can, make game shootouts. But I think the most important thing when you start talking about how you want to build your football team, whether you're talking about offensive side of the ball, defensive side of the ball, is the line of scrimmage. Being 100%. Able to win the line of scrimmage, that's the thing that I would invest significant resources in. And I got to be honest, I love what the Jets are doing in terms of trying to build the offensive line. Like, one of the things that led to Sam Darnold's undoing in his time here with the Jets was that they weren't able to keep the quarterback upright. And so you see Joe Douglas and Rob Saleh making a concerted effort to protect their future franchise quarterback. They went out and they got a blue-chip left tackle last year, Mekhi Becton. I mean, he was the fourth tackle off the board, but, I mean, you can make an argument that he was the best player last year. I mean, Tristan Wirfs had a hell of a campaign, winning a Super Bowl in his rookie year. Jedrick Wills looked good as well. But, I mean, Mekhi Becton, when he's at his best, is more dominant than both of those guys. And so I like the fact that you have that as one of your cornerstones. Then getting him a running mate at left guard with AVT, and then going out and making the frugal move and being able to get Morgan Moses on a 1-year deal for less than $5 million. I mean, I just think that that's what you've got to do when you're trying to develop a franchise quarterback. You have to put the infrastructure in place to take advantage of all of the things that he's bringing to the table, and a big part of that is making sure that he stays upright. So I love the fact that the Jets are building their team this way.
Yeah, I've said this over and over again. I'm not sure if I've had a chance to talk with you about this doing shows, but I've done football games now for, you know, 20 years and 15 years doing college football games for ESPN. And the routine normally is you go into a film room with your analyst and you watch game tape to get ready for the game. And I have worked with all walks of football life. I've worked with coaches. I've worked with players. I've worked with offensive guys, defensive guys, three or four different quarterbacks, defensive coordinators. It doesn't matter what the background is of the guy I've worked with, who my partner is. We go in the tape room, we turn on the tape. The first thing all of their eyes go to is the offensive line. Can Team A block Team B? If Team A can't block Team B, Team A's dead. I don't care who your quarterback is. And you know, we saw that in the Super Bowl last year. The most unstoppable offense right now in the NFL, if you could pick one offense, everybody would probably pick Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
What did they look like in the Super Bowl last year when they couldn't block the Bucs? The best quarterback on planet Earth couldn't make a play because he spent the whole game running for his life. And I remember tweeting at the time, Patrick Mahomes, welcome to the last 3 years of Sam Darnold's life. Right? Like, that's what we watched. We watched Sam Darnold out there by himself. And I get the teams need weapons. So I thought the Giants getting Galladay, the Giants spending premium draft capital on a Kadarius Toney, the Jets going out, signing Corey Davis, as you said, drafting Elijah Moore, very important. The Jets' skill position players were certainly a big part of how they hung Sam Darnold out to dry for 3 years, but they hung him out to dry more than anything, not giving him help up front to block the other team. And I think both of these teams have shown you with how they've looked at the draft and at free agency over the last couple of years. Giants as well. I mean, maybe not the, you know, the headlines as a rookie of, you know, what Mekhi Becton became, but I thought Andrew Thomas was much better later in last season than he was at the start of the season. I mean, don't you think the Giants offensive line has a chance to develop and come around this year and maybe be a much more cohesive and better unit than we saw maybe at any point last year?
Well, yeah, they have to be better, right? They can't be much worse than they were last year. I think they were bottom five in pass block win rate. So, I mean, they have to improve. But you know this, B.O.B., from covering the sport for so long. Like, out of all the position groups on a football team, the offensive line relies on chemistry and rapport more so than any of them. Like, they have to have those games under their belt. They have to be able to work together in order to be able to function the way that it's supposed to.
Yep.
And so when you're trying to put an offensive line on the fly, put an offensive line together on the fly like the Giants were last year with a COVID-impacted season with, you know, no offseason or virtual offseason, modified training camp, no preseason games. Like, all of those things were working against them in terms of them being able to develop the chemistry that they would need in order to do their jobs and keep the quarterback, Daniel Jones, clean. But I think having a full offseason under their belt and those young guys going into year two, guys like Matt Parrott, guys like Shane Lemieux, like, that's only going to help the Giants in terms of them improving. Andrew Thomas, of course, is one of the guys that's going to be front and center. But, I mean, I really have high hopes for this offensive line just because I like some of the signs that I saw in the second half. And the most important thing is they formed an identity overall. I felt like the Giants offense found something when they involved Daniel Jones in some of their zone running schemes. Mm-hmm. And then their just overall ability to be able to dictate at the point of attack, to be able to move the line of scrimmage. I thought you saw that in the second half of that season. And point in case would be that Seattle Seahawks game. Like, if you go back and watch that game with Colt McCoy in the center, you watch what that Giants offensive line was able to do. Like, to me, that's who they need to be. That's the identity that they should be looking to try to continue to build on coming into year two with a lot of those young guys. So, I mean, I'm excited to see what that group can become. But to your point, they absolutely have to be better if you're going to get a better version of Daniel Jones.
Yeah, and both general managers, obviously, are attached to the hip to their quarterbacks. Their legacies are going to be based on how these two quarterbacks play. Whether they keep their jobs are going to be based on how these two quarterbacks play. You have to support them. Or you have to give the quarterback a fighting chance. The Jets drafted Sam Darnold attached, as Mike Maccagnan did, his job to whether or not Sam Darnold was going to develop, and then never put anybody in front of him to protect him, never gave him anybody to throw the ball to. So I like the fact that not only are both of these quarterbacks the, you know, quote-unquote future of these franchises, but both general managers are giving them a puncher's chance to go out there and get the job done by supporting them and giving them somebody to block for them.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Does the K Beach Bash resemble the Chris Canty, 28 years old, hard rock pool party in Vegas? You think it's like a lateral move?
Yeah, A-Ball says doubtful. I don't want to put a damper on Bar A turning into Bar K in August, but I don't think it's going to resemble what we did back at the Hard Rock at rehab during the pool parties. It's definitely not going to be the same thing. Like, the stuff that we got into, just popping bottles, like, you know, it was a whole lot going on. It was a total scene. Total scene, B.O.B. Like, it was just like, that was the place you wanted to be in Vegas back in the late, you know, 2010s. Like, that's where you wanted to be.
Yeah. We don't want you to get you divorced before you get married, right? Maybe
exactly.
We should probably try and avoid that. Because
yeah,
I remember seeing
exactly.
The pictures of the proposal. And, that was a good, I don't know what you did, you know. She's holding the coffee cup in the proposal, right? Like, did she have absolutely no idea that you were about to do what you did when you did it?
No, she had no clue. So we went to the museum. You know, I had to come up with some kind of excuse for her to put on clothes because we're still kind of in COVID lockdowns, you know, everything that's going on in the city. And so we're going out to the museum, and I had to time it just right because I had the photographers trail us from the museum into Central Park.
Gotcha.
And so that was a whole deal. But, I mean, I'm surprised that she didn't pick up on it because I thought I gave it away several times leading up to it just because I was so damn nervous. But, I mean, it just so happened to work out and caught her completely by surprise. And when I got on one knee and I asked her, like, there were no words coming out of her mouth. Like, she said, like she just, like, there was a bystander that actually recorded a video because they figured what was going down. And you could actually hear on the video, like, she's just, like, shaking her head, but she's not saying anything. And I'm like, so is that a yes? Like, what are we doing? And so, obviously, it was a yes. But that was a magical moment. And, B.O.B., I appreciate you not digging a little bit deeper into my Vegas archives.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, I would like to stay engaged and eventually be married to this woman.
Yeah, let's not get you divorced before, you know, we actually have you walk down the aisle
just
or her
hangover.
Walk down the
just
aisle.
Just think
yeah.
The hangover, all three parts. Like, just think the hangover.
You.
Like, that's kind of how it went down.
All right. Yeah. Were you the guy in the trunk?
No.
Okay.
No, I wasn't the guy in the trunk. Think of me more as the Bradley Cooper character, just trying to keep things on the rails as much as possible.
Yeah,
kind of like
the
show.
I would have been the guy in the truck. That probably would have been me. So how many photographers were following you? Like, how did she not pick up? Were there people, like, jumping in and out behind walls and bushes and stuff to try and get the shot?
No, we had two photographers. We had two photographers that were following us, so I guess they took turns trying to trail us.
And she never picked up on this?
She never picked up on it, had no clue.
All right. Yeah.
It was good. It was good.
I climbed up to my wife's window. My wife was a huge fan of The Wonder Years. Remember
okay.
that show?
Yeah, like with
that
Fred one. Savage, yeah.
Yeah, it might have been before you were born. But
no, stop it.
Fred Savage, of course, being a Jet fan.
One of the best show theme songs,
yes.
By the way, as well. Yeah, we were talking about that. Yeah.
There's that one episode where Winnie Cooper breaks her arm or whatever, breaks her leg. She's in bed, and he climbs up to the window. It looks. She always had a soft spot for that episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the idea that I would, and I'm a complete scared wuss. Like, I am not. I figured if I climb up to her window and ask her, because she gave me, how come you never climb up to my window? I figure if I climb up to her window and ask her to marry me, I'll never have to climb up to the window again, because every climb up to the window after that would be anticlimactic. So I got two buddies to, haul a ladder down a driveway in the dark. I climbed up to her bedroom window, and it was raining, and she screamed, fell on the floor, took the ring, and ran off into the house and disappeared, left me in the rain on the roof.
I like your game plan, bringing a little nostalgia into the proposal. That's
yeah.
Personal touch. I like that. The question I have is, how high is the damn window? Because, I mean, it gets to a point where it's like, oh, this is one of those things that sounds good in theory.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about, you know, 15 feet in the air on a ladder, I don't know, especially in the rain.
She grew up in one of those colonial houses where there's like the family room on the left, and mm-hmm. her bedroom window was right over the family room. So I had to get up on the ladder, climb up to the family room, and like shimmy across the roof. So I was actually not even on the ladder. I was like sitting in the rain on a wet roof. Slanted, worried that all of a sudden, if that started to get a little slippery, I might end up in the shrubbery. And she ran away. She took the ring and left. And I heard her like yelling and screaming off somewhere in the house with her mom. That you know, but eventually she let me in. It worked out.
There you go. It did work out for you. But there's so many ways that could have went wrong, though, Bob.
Yeah.
So many different ways.
You're exactly right.
Who is this guy climbing up the ladder trying to get my window?
I never really thought about that. I never really thought about what the neighbors might have been thinking if they looked out the window and saw the silhouette.
There's a guy robbing the house next door.
Yeah. Of two dudes holding the ladder and a guy shimmying up to the... And this, by the way, she was a nurse. So she worked like a 3 o'clock to 10 o'clock shift and then went out with her friends, unbeknownst to us. So we were on a stakeout. This probably happened at like 11:30 at night. So I never really thought about what the visual was of 11:30 at night, three guys with a ladder and I'm climbing up. If somebody would have seen that, like, you know, as they were driving by, yeah, that could have been a 911 call in a heartbeat. That's actually an aspect of it I never really thought about.
I'll tell you, a couple of 911 calls, because, I mean, first of all, you have the robbery aspect of it. Secondly, if you slip on the ladder and you fall, you're going to have to call 911 because you probably broke a couple of bones. So you might be engaged, but it might be in a situation where she has to take care of you because you can't move around.
Yeah, well, that would have been foreshadowing our entire marriage.
Glad none of those things happened. Yeah, All's well that ends well.
That is good. That's a good point. All right, 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Bob Wischusen in for two-thirds of DCR, but the classy part of DCR, Chris Candy, decided to come back to Vegas and hang out with me. Let's head to the phones. We got John in his car, and he's driving around, wants to talk football with us on DCR on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, John.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. It's not really like a statement of facts or anything, but, you know, just watching the Jets this year with the little program they put out, there's a lot of optimism. I think from the top down, they're really doing it right, and I just want to hear your take if you've seen anything about Zach Wilson or anybody else on the team that should have me feeling anything different right now.
Well, I mean, when you say optimistic, like, I guess, Chris, what would – people keep asking me, like, what about the Jets this year? What are they going to do? You can't put a win total on it to me. Right? They won two games last year. They have a rookie quarterback this year. They got a rookie left guard. They got a second-year left tackle. They have a brand-new offense. They have a rookie running back. They're going to have a rookie slot receiver. I just think there's an eye test element to the Jets this year. Look competent. Right? It's a 17-game season. If they win 6 or 7 – great, but even when they lose, can you lose 31-24, 34-27, score some points, have the ball with 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter of a good football game, let the quarterback will throw a pick six here and there. It's going to happen, right? He's a rookie. That's the way it works in the NFL 99% of the time. But last year, it felt like for two-thirds of the season, we were calling games that it was 20-3 in the fourth quarter. It's just like, all right, like, you know, I mean, it's like no hope, right? At least it's not, to me, a win total argument as much as it is, can you just see the arrow pointing up with this young nucleus of players that you know Joe Douglas is now going to want to add to next year with the cap space and draft choices that he has?
Yeah, I think you're right on with that one, Bob. Like, I feel like it's just a matter of, okay, is this team competitive? Are they in a lot of games? Can they make them fourth quarter games? Similar to what we saw from the Giants last year. Like, if you look at the Giants, I mean, outside of that week 3 debacle against the 49ers, I mean, there really weren't a whole lot of blowout games to speak of. I mean, off the top of my head, that one, right. Maybe the game against the Arizona Cardinals where Daniel Jones was dealing with the hamstring. Like, those are the only games where I would point to and say, yeah, I just didn't feel like the Giants had a chance in that one. But all the other games, like the Giants were competitive. Like Joe Judge had that group being able to fight, scratch, and claw, and find ways to stay in games despite their quarterback turning the ball over at a high clip. Like, that's what you're looking for if you're the Jets. Yeah, you know that Zach Wilson is going to make some mistakes. That's just the learning curve that comes along with having a rookie quarterback. But can you find a way to put this team in position where they can at least go out there and compete every single week? I think that's a step in the right direction. And if they do that, if they make themselves that physically tough, hard-nosed type of team, the team that Rob Saleh is talking about, all gas, no breaks, if they can do that, then they're going to have an opportunity to be in a lot of games. Even if they don't find themselves on the winning side of those games, you can chalk that up to young guys trying to figure it out in the NFL. But, like, if you're going out there and you're getting blown out, all of a sudden you have to question everything that you're doing, including this new culture that Joe Douglas and Rob Saleh are trying to build.
Yeah, I mean, the first, like, if I just give you the first 8, 9, 10 games last year for the Jets, you went through it. But, like, the points that they scored on offense, 17 against the Bills, 13 against the 49ers, 7 against the Colts, losing 36-7. They scored 10 against the Cardinals. They lost 30-10. They got shut out by Miami, beat 24-0. They lost to the Bills again 18-10. They lost to the Chiefs 35-9. You know, I mean, you were 0-8. And they had scored like 5 touchdowns. They scored 28 points against the Broncos, 37-28 they lost. And that was the bright spot, because at least they scored 28 points. Right? Like, at least the ball got to the end zone a few times, and it looked like a football game. To me, if you've got losses, but they're more of that variety, you also have, you know, some... I mean, you can't address everything if you're the Jets all at once. They didn't do much to the secondary, right? They got LaMarcus Joyner to put next to Marcus May. They've got like some experience at safety.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing at corner, though.
Well, they didn't. I mean,
I think
they don't either. Yeah. At this point, you know what they're doing at corner right now? Waiting until next year.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing.
This is fingers crossed, right?
Yeah, because
hoping that one of these veteran players might shake loose somebody that makes sense for them in terms of their overall scheme. That's what they have to do, because right now their cornerback position doesn't have a whole lot of experience. You're talking about Bless Austin being their most experienced corner right now.
Yeah, Bryce Hall probably has the highest ceiling from what he showed when he finally got on the field last year. He will be a starter.
Where did Bryce Hall go to school at BLB?
I think he went to UVA.
You think he went to UVA?
Okay. I think he was a Who, wasn't he?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, all right. I've heard that occasionally is a school that puts out a football player.
Just every now and again. Yeah.
That would
Chris
be
Canty, wahoo wah.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. And DeBrickashaw,
mm-hmm.
And Tiki.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
We got a lot of wahoos out there in the NFL.
Yeah.
Right? Chris Long, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of guys.
Yeah. So, all right, now that we got sidetracked
yeah,
on Charlottesville.
Yeah, just had to do that. had to take the detour to Charlottesville real quick. But that's where the Jets secondary is right now. Like, this is a lot of, like, let's wait and see, give these young guys an opportunity, see what they can go out and do in training camp, and then we'll reassess once we get to the early part of the regular season.
Right. Like, I think they looked at corner as a position that, all right, we got Bryce Hall, we're going to see what he can do, but we'll just kind of roll the dice with late-round draft capital and see if we hit a diamond in the rough. And they took 3 corners later in the draft that I think they think have a high ceiling, but those guys is rookie. If you're a 4th or 5th round draft choice at a premium position, and now you're going to be a rookie in the NFL, what do we have a right to expect from Pinnock or Carter or any of those guys? We'll see. But I think they're probably looking at corner as you can't have all the things you want, and you can't do it all in 1 year. And next year they've got 2 1s, 2 2s, a lot of draft capital. Based on if they hit this year on the positions that they did prioritize, I would think next year there's a very good chance that corner is going to be high, very high on their list of priorities, either in free agency or the draft. It would have to be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no doubt about it. But, I mean, in the short term, that's going to put a lot of pressure on your front 7, in particular your defensive line. And you mentioned it at the top of the show. You felt like the Jets have a top 10 defensive line in the NFL. I'm still a little more skeptical about it. I got to wait and see. But I like some of the pieces that they have. I love the addition of Carl Lawson in free agency, and I love what Quinnen Williams is becoming. Sheldon Rankins, can he stay healthy, is a big question. And then you got Kyle Phillips, who's steady as they come. But, I mean, I'm interested to see what that group will become. But they're going to have to be ultra productive if they're going to mask the inexperience and potential deficiencies that you have at the cornerback spot. Because, I mean, I don't care how good your cornerbacks are, they can't cover forever. So if your pass rush can get there and put pressure on quarterbacks, maybe that can make life a little bit easier for guys on the back end. At least that's what you would have to hope if you're a Jets fan.
Well, a couple things. John Franklin Myers last year had one of the sneaky best seasons of any player in the NFL.
That's right, coming over from the Rams, yep.
Nobody talked about him because he was on a lousy team, but he really was, like, he could stand out this year. Nathan Shepard, Foley Fatukasi, I think give them a lot of, like, strong physical depth on the interior. I think, look, can Carl Lawson turn into one of the real elite pass rushers? Can Vinnie Curry find it again? I don't know. But I do think, at the very least, I would go out on a limb and say I think the Jets are going to have a top five to top seven run defensive line this year. I think against the – and I think that is going to help their secondary in a big way. I think they can play a little soft – zone-wise on early downs and still expect to get some teams at some point in most possessions into second and third and long, which, of course, is going to be a big advantage to an inexperienced secondary because I think their defensive line can control the line of scrimmage against most of the teams they play. Not all, but most of the teams they play. I think they'll be a hard team to run against.
Yeah, and that's going to help them create situations where they're obvious passing downs based on down to distances. Like that. Like that's what you talked about. Like, it's amazing how good pass rushers are, defensive linemen are, at getting after the quarterback when they know it's a passing situation. So you have to hope, if you're a Jets fan, like this front seven is really, really good at being able to stop the runs on early downs, you know, make it second and eight, make it third and six or better. Like that way those defensive linemen can pin their ears back and try to put some pressure on these quarterbacks to help your secondary. But, I mean, listen, at some point, if you're a secondary, you're going to have to be able to play some man-to-man coverage and be effective at it in the NFL. And that's one of the things that has to be a huge question mark for the Jets. Like, just having confidence that that group can go out there and be able to do that when the circumstances call for it. So I just, like, that's the thing that has me on the fence about the Jets defense. Yeah. To me, like, it's not about the defensive line. It's not about the linebacking core. It's all about the secondary, in particular the corners. Just seeing how they progress as we move through training camp, I think that's going to be a huge, huge thing to watch for the Jets.
There's no doubt. If there is an Achilles heel, it is clear the way opposing offensive coordinators are going to be looking for a way to attack the Jets. You're going to want to attack their inability to cover and their youth at the cornerback spot. Be a lot of perimeter throws. I'm sure the Jets will respond with a lot of zone and count on Marcus May and LaMarcus Joyner to help support those guys. But, yeah, there's, you know, the pass rush without blitzing is going to be a big factor for them this year if they could put some pressure on the quarterback without having to send too many numbers and expose those guys.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.